Okay, well, good morning, everyone. I hope you were able to watch the short film depicting life in New York City in 1911. I sent it to you with the link for today's service. And if you didn't get to watch it, it's still there. You can watch it, or you can just Google it, New York City, 1911. It's on YouTube. It's very interesting. It's, I think, less than 8 minutes long. But I used to show this to my U.S. history students, and I would ask them what they found was different then than today. And of course, I heard from my students a number of observations, namely, so many people walking, or so few cars on the street, or the modest and fully clothed people with women wearing blouses and ankle-length skirts, while many men wore suits and hats. And I still remember to this day one student who made an observation that I hadn't even noticed. She said, "Everyone is thin." Wow, that observation never left me. And what has happened to America with our weight? With 3/4 of Americans predicted to be overweight and obese this year, 2020, we have a very different human landscape in that arena in barely over 100 years. So today I want to talk about this message called Addicted to Eating. This topic has been a great concern to me for a while now. My brother in Christ, David Brousseau, is working on this message. In fact, he was working on a book about this in conjunction with another message, Addicted to Spending. The two are very similar problems. David has encouraged me to speak on this topic, and I'm grateful to him for that. And as my eye heals, I hope to have a CD on this topic finished by next summer, Lord willing. As Christians, we must not be addicted to eating or anything else that is potentially or definitely harmful. Also, we should be making wise choices in what we eat and how much we eat as well. We can be addicted to eating, spending, or a host of other things that will rob us of our spiritual fervor. And I think that's important to know. No matter what the addiction is, the reason for it is usually the same, lack of self-control. However, you're not very likely to hear a sermon on the topic of overeating or addiction to eating. I don't believe I've ever heard one in my nearly 40 years of being a Christian. Why? Because it would be very embarrassing to many of the people in the congregation. Unlike certain other sins in our day, Christians who overeat aren't necessarily brothers and sisters who are worldly, who are spiritually weak in other areas. In fact, quite often, those who overeat hold positions of authority in the church and are viewed as spiritually strong men and women. They're people we all love and we're friends with. This makes it awkward to preach a message about addiction to eating. And I've had to pray a lot about this. But just like teaching the truth about divorce and remarriage in many churches today, it's neglected because so many professing Christians are divorced and remarried. I think this is one of the quote-unquote elephants in the room for kingdom Christians. And I mean that by that, those striving to live by every word of Christ. And it is an honest message about overeating and being overweight or obese. So why don't I just leave well alone and move on to another topic? It's because the problem of overeating keeps growing in our day. And it's a serious problem. And this problem's not going to go away on its own. I feel very blessed that I can share this message now and know I am speaking to a group of believers who take their walk with Jesus very seriously and will consider carefully what John and I share today. By the way, in case you're wondering, this isn't going to be one of those messages in which some skinny guy with lots of willpower is going to be preaching, "Repent, sinners," to all those listening who are overweight. No, like many Americans, I've been overweight much of my adult life. In fact, not too many years ago, I was on the side of obesity with the myriad of related health problems that go with it. Like our dear sister Dana Geibel shared when she saw a picture of me from 5 years ago on Facebook, and she exclaimed that I look like a different person now. Well, Dana, that's how I looked for over 2 decades, and I am a different person now. Like any spiritual struggle we may be having in our life, be it pornography, overspending, alcohol, or tobacco abuse, etc., I hope we can be a people who rally to each other's side and provide love, support, accountability, and truly journey with each other. So John and I are not here to condemn, far from it, but rather it is our love for all of you as our dear brothers and sisters in Christ and our desire for all of us to obey God more fully we share this message today. The problem of overeating among Americans today has reached such huge proportions that both the government and the medical community are calling it an epidemic. Here are some of the hard facts, and I just don't have time to go into all of them. Americans and Mexicans are the most obese people in the history of mankind. As I mentioned earlier, this year it has been forecast that 75% of adult Americans are overweight. About one-third of adult Americans are classified as obese, meaning they are grossly overweight. The medical community's definition of obesity is essentially that more than one-third of your body is made up of fat. There's a measurement of body fat called the Body Mass Index, or BMI. It's calculated based on your weight and height. Essentially, a BMI of 18.5 to 24.9 is considered normal. Below that is underweight, and over that is overweight. Now, above the number 30 is considered obese. And the forecast for America is even worse in the days ahead. This is earlier this year from CNN. It says, if America does not collectively adopt healthier eating habits, over half the nation will be obese within 10 years. Even worse, one in four Americans will be severely obese, with a body mass index over 35, which means they'll be more than 100 pounds overweight. The world will have more than 250 million obese kids by 2030, and a new report warns. That alarming prediction published Wednesday in NEJM was the result of a study analyzing self-reported body mass data from over 6 million American adults. Considering the challenges of battling weight loss, that's devastating news for the future health of our nation. Obesity is one of the leading preventable causes of death worldwide. Doctors view it as one of the most serious public health problems of the 21st century. In fact, poor diet and lack of exercise is the second biggest cause of preventable death after tobacco. And it's ahead of number three, alcohol abuse. More statistics from Stanford University Hospital. Obesity has a far-ranging negative effect on health. Each year, obesity-related conditions cost over $150 billion and cause an estimated 300,000 premature deaths in the United States. The health effects associated with obesity include, and I personally was suffering from several of these before I took charge of my health and eating, but are not limited to the following. High blood pressure. Additional fat tissue in the body needs oxygen and nutrients in order to live, which requires the blood vessels to circulate more blood to the fat tissue. This increases the workload of the heart because it must pump more blood through additional blood vessels. More circulating blood also means more pressure on the artery walls. Higher pressure on the artery walls increases blood pressure. In addition, extra weight can raise the heart rate and reduce the body's ability to transport blood through the vessels. Diabetes. Obesity is the major cause of type 2 diabetes. This type of diabetes usually begins in adulthood, but now is actually occurring in children. Obesity can cause resistance to insulin, the hormone that regulates blood sugar. When obesity causes insulin resistance, the blood sugar becomes elevated. Even moderate obesity dramatically increases the risk of diabetes, heart disease. Arteriosclerosis, the hardening of the arteries, is present 10 times more often in obese people compared to those who are not obese. Coronary artery disease is also more prevalent because fatty deposits build up in arteries that supply the heart. Narrowed arteries and reduced blood flow to the heart can cause chest pain or angina or a heart attack. Blood clots can also form in narrowed arteries and cause a stroke. Joint problems, including osteoarthritis. Obesity can affect the knees and hips because of the stress placed on the joints by extra weight. Joint replacement surgery, while commonly performed on damaged joints, may not be an advisable option for an obese person because the artificial joint has a higher risk of loosening and causing further damage. Sleep apnea and respiratory problems. Sleep apnea, which causes people to stop breathing for brief periods, interrupts sleep throughout the night and causes sleepiness during the day. It also causes heavy snoring. Respiratory problems associated with obesity occur when added weight of the chest wall squeezes the lungs and causes restricted breathing. Sleep apnea is also associated with high blood pressure. Cancer. In women, being overweight contributes to an increased risk for a variety of cancers, including breast, colon, gallbladder, and uterus. Men who are overweight have a higher risk of colon and prostate cancers. There are other health issues related to being overweight as well, but I think you guys get the idea. So obesity greatly increases the risk of heart disease, stroke, high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, certain cancers, sleep apnea, osteoarthritis, and other diseases. Obesity-related problems cost America in excess of $150 billion a year, just in added medical costs. That's not counting the billions of dollars it costs every year in lost productivity. And this number is only about obesity, not overeating in general. The cost of the total problem of America's addiction to food would probably be closer to $500 billion. Now, the world generally sees overeating as a problem only related to health costs and reduced quality of life and shortened lifespans. But for us Kingdom Christians, there's another dimension that makes it much, much more serious. Overeating is sin. It's a sin that churches normally address throughout the centuries since Christ was on earth. At least it was a sin that churches addressed when it was rare. Now that it's everywhere, churches are afraid to address the issue. In this respect, gluttony or overeating has now joined a bunch of other sins that the church has stopped talking about. And I desire to see that changed, at least in our fellowship. And even as I'm saying this, I realize that I've been avoiding using the word gluttony because it sounds so much more awful than the word overeating. In fact, we've worked out an unspoken understanding in our churches that gluttony is definitely a sin. However, it's an undefined sin, a sin that surely none of us are guilty of. When we think of gluttony, we conjure up the story that the ancient Romans gorged themselves at their banquets until they couldn't hold anymore. Then they went into a vomitorium where they tickled their throats with feathers to make them throw up so they could go back and gorge some more. We like that myth because it takes gluttony beyond the scope of anything we would do today. And it is a myth. I have found absolutely no evidence that this ever happened in Rome. But we are only doing ourselves a disservice when we define sins in such a way as they would only apply to some imaginary situation. God doesn't concern himself with imaginary sins. The Bible talks about gluttony because it is a real sin and occurs in a real world. So exactly what is gluttony? One source defines it as an inordinate desire to consume more than one requires. My dictionary defines it as the act or practice of eating to excess. Is this different from overeating? Well, my dictionary defines overeating as consuming too much food. In other words, gluttony and overeating are synonymous. So when I use the term overeating, don't imagine that it's anything different than gluttony. But you may ask, what does it mean to consume too much food or to eat to excess? To answer that, let me explain a little bit about how God has designed our bodies. Now, you can't overfill a water glass. We all know this. If I pour water into a glass, once it reaches the top, I can't keep filling the glass. The excess will just flow over the top. If the glass holds only 8 ounces, that's all I can put in the glass. However, it's not the way with our bodies. And there's a very good reason for that. Throughout most of human history, the issue facing mankind wasn't overeating or obesity. It was starvation and malnutrition. Famines caused by weather and war were all too common. So God designed our bodies differently than a glass of water. We can't overfill a water glass, but we can overfill our bodies. When we eat more than our bodies require at the moment, our bodies store the excess food as fat. In other words, when we eat all the calories we need to consume at a given meal, our bodies don't necessarily fill to the full. That's by God's design. So throughout most of human history, it wasn't necessarily a sin to consume more calories at a meal than what you'd need that day. That's because next week or next winter, there may not be enough food. The excess food you've stored as fat might save your life. So God was looking out for our good when he designed our bodies. Yet, even in ancient times, God did not want his people to gorge themselves. When the Israelites planned to pig out on quail, God struck them dead. And you can read about that in Numbers 11. All throughout the Old Testament, God condemns gluttony or overeating. In other words, it was all right to eat additional calories during plentiful times so you would have a little extra for lean times, but it was never all right to eat in excess what you reasonably needed. God never condoned obesity. So that you can see that more clearly, let me explain a little bit about body fat percentage. A normally healthy and fit person has body fat and needs it. So fat isn't the enemy here. It's just having too much of it. A man needs at least 2 to 5% body fat, and a woman needs more, at least 10 to 13%. And those are minimum figures. But a man can have anywhere from 6 to 17% body fat and still be healthy and fit. A woman can have anywhere from 14 to 24% body fat and still be healthy and fit. So when I'm talking about God's design that allows our body to store fat, I'm not talking about being obese or even overweight. During times of plenty, a healthy Israelite man might have had 17% body fat, and he wasn't overweight. During lean times, perhaps his body fat percentage would dip to 6 or 7%. So a person's quote-unquote normal weight is always given as a range, not a static figure. To put it another way, the way God designed our bodies requires us to use self-control when we eat. That's because we'll normally eat all of the calories we need before we fill to the full. After all, even a gluttonous person with no self-control will normally stop eating when it's no longer pleasurable to eat. However, if we stop eating at a meal only once we feel stuffed, we've already eaten in excess. If it's wrong for the ancient Israelites to eat in excess, Numbers 11 talks about that, even when the possibility of starvation was a reality, what is it for us? What is the root problem when we have a problem with overeating or gluttony? The root problem is that we lack self-control. That was certainly the case for me. And the scriptures tell us about self-control. Turn, if you would now, to Galatians chapter 5, 19 through 23. And some of these we'll read together, and then some I'm just going to give them to you because there's no way I'll be talking till 12:30, and I don't want to do that to you guys. So Galatians 5, 19 through 23 says, "Now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envies, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I told you in time past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control." So self-control is a fruit of the Spirit. The lack of self-control is evidently then a product of the flesh. Perhaps that's why Paul uses such strong language when he denounces Christians whose, quote-unquote, God is their belly. He wrote to the Philippians, and if you read on with me, in Philippians 3, verses 17 through 19. Philippians 3, verses 17 through 19. And whoever came on, if you could mute your phone. Thank you. It says in Philippians 3:17, "Brethren, join in following my example and note those who so walk as you have us for a pattern. For many walk, whom I have told you often, and now tell you even weeping, that they are enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, and whose glory is in their shame, who set their mind on earthly things." Now, I don't think Paul is saying that the only sin of these people is that their God is their belly. But he obviously links overeating with Christians who have set their minds on earthly things. He used a similar expression when writing to the Romans, speaking of Christians who serve their bellies. And if you want to look that up later, that's in Romans 16:18. Romans 16:18. So we shouldn't wink at overeating as though it were something insignificant. Now, normally I don't use the argument, "Can you picture Jesus doing?" I mean, I can't picture Jesus driving a car, or even driving an Amish buggy for that matter. I can't picture him wearing sunglasses. I can't picture him eating a hamburger at McDonald's. But that doesn't make those things wrong. The truth is, we can't honestly picture Jesus in circumstances that are different from the historical setting in which he lived. But I'm going to ask you to think about something a little different here. I want you to picture Jesus in the historical setting in which he lived. Think of him the way you've seen him in countless paintings, etc. Put him in the same clothes and the same setting you always picture him in your mind. The only change I want you to make is to picture him fat. A corpulent, obese Jesus. Can you do that? I can't. In fact, it almost seems unclean to try to do it. Why? Because I think we instinctively know that being overweight is connected with sin, but Jesus was sinless. Maybe Jesus was on the thin side. We don't know. But I think we all know in our hearts that he wasn't fat. And it's hard to picture Paul or Peter or John as being fat either, isn't it? In fact, when I see any paintings of Jesus, the apostles, or other early Christian leaders, they are never, I mean, never depicted as overweight. They are always, always on the lean side. It's interesting to note that the Bible often links gluttony and drunkenness. When it talks about one, it often talks about the other. For example, note these passages, and for the sake of time, I'll go over them quickly, so you may want to write them down and study them later. Deuteronomy chapter 21, verses 20 and 21. And this is talking about a rebellious child, and it says, "And they, the parents, shall say to the elders of his city, 'This son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard.' Then all the men of his city shall stone him to death with stones. So you shall put away the evil from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear." That was given while the Israelites were still in the wilderness. What do you think about gluttony? What do you think gluttony consisted of there? Was a glutton back then eating any differently than the way so many Americans eat today? What about this one? Proverbs 23 in verses 20 and 21. "Do not mix with winebibbers or with gluttonous eaters of meat, for the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags." Next we come to Isaiah 22 verses 12 through 14. And I read this not too many days ago because I'm reading in Isaiah. "And in that day the Lord God of hosts called for weeping and for mourning, for baldness and for girding with sackcloth. But instead joy and gladness, slaying oxen and killing sheep, eating meat and drinking wine. Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. Then it was revealed in my hearing by the Lord of hosts, 'Surely for this iniquity there will be no atonement for you.'" Isaiah isn't saying that any of these things are necessarily wrong in themselves, but they were inappropriate for God's people when they should have been repenting of their sins. The prophet Amos paints a similar picture in Amos chapter 6, verses 3 through 7. "Woe to you who put far off the day of doom, who cause the seed of violence to come near, who lie on beds of ivory, stretch out on your clothes, eat lambs from the flock and calves from the midst of the stall, who sing idly to the sound of string instruments and invent for yourselves musical instruments like David, who drink wine from bowls and anoint yourselves with the best ointments, but are not grieved for the affliction of Joseph. Therefore they shall now go captive as the first of the captives, and those who recline at banquets shall be removed." Interestingly, the connection between eating excessively and drinking excessively continues in the New Testament. For example, in his parable of the faithful and wise steward, Jesus gives description of the evil steward. If you want to turn to Luke chapter 12, verses 45 and 46. Luke 12, 45 and 46. "But if that servant says in his heart, 'My master is delaying in his coming,' and begins to beat the male and female servants, and to eat and drink and be drunk, the master of that servant will come on a day when he's not looking for him, and an hour when he's not aware, and will cut him in two and appoint him his portion with the unbelievers." Among other things, Jesus describes the evil steward as eating and drinking and being drunk. If drinking was the only issue, why did Jesus talk about eating as well? I find it interesting that most Christians I know would distance themselves from the evil servant when it comes to drinking. They don't even touch strong drink, let alone drink it in excess. But when it comes to eating in abundance, they don't see any spiritual issue. So why does God so often mention overeating and overdrinking in the same breath? One of the strongest condemnations of gluttony was made by the Apostle Paul in his letter to Titus. When Paul wrote to Titus, Titus was serving on the island of Crete. Paul makes this observation in Titus chapter 1, verses 12 and 13. Titus 1, verses 12 and 13. And it reads, "One of them, a prophet of their own, said, 'Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, lazy gluttons. This testimony is true.'" Does Paul then skip over this description as though it was no big deal? Not at all. He immediately tells Titus, "Therefore rebuke them sharply, that they may be sound in the faith. So if we ourselves are gluttons, where does that put us? It means we aren't sound in the faith and we need to be rebuked. but that almost never happens. We rebuke certain sins, but almost never gluttony. This inconsistency particularly concerns me when it comes to kingdom Christians. And again, by kingdom Christians, I'm referring to believers who have made a commitment to live by the kingdom teachings of Jesus, beginning with the Sermon on the Mount and continuing throughout the entire New Testament. I'm personally committed to kingdom Christianity, and I fellowship with like-minded believers. So often the approach we take in our churches to New Testament commandments and principles is to make some specific application of them. For example, the New Testament commands that the women adorn themselves in modest apparel with propriety and moderation. That, if you want to look it up later, is in 1 Timothy 2:9. Out of our eagerness to live by the New Testament teachings, our churches normally set some minimum standards to what modest dress consists of. And we've talked about this, and we've numerous times. We do that with other commandments and principles. But what do you do about gluttony? About Christians who serve their bellies? In general, absolutely nothing. We're stricter than the Bible requires on many sins, but on this one, we just look the other way. We would all say that gluttony is a sin, but then we make no effort to define it or to give it any application. And I think that 3/4 of Americans being overweight or obese has made us become reluctant to address it now. However, Christ hates that kind of double standard. He condemned the scribes and Pharisees for that very kind of behavior. He noted that they paid tithes even on the mint and anise and cumin they grew in their gardens. Yet they violated a major teaching of the law by devouring widows' houses. That's in Matthew 23, verse 23. Matthew 23, 23. Do we do the same? We certainly don't devour widows' houses, but we are often very inconsistent, just like the Pharisees. Now, at this point, Brother John's going to share his own struggle with weight and eating, which might surprise you. And he's going to probably be talking at a different angle from most of us, but I think it's helpful. And then I'll share how I overcame my eating and my serious weight problem. So, Brother John.
Okay, thank you, Dean. Dean has focused on being addicted to eating so far, and what I've decided to focus on is eating and staying healthy as it relates to vanity. More and more in America and around the world, I think we're bombarded with media and ads on diets and exercise equipment and stuff like that that's geared towards losing weight, but I think moreover looking good. I think that's what it's geared toward. And losing weight is a good thing if you need it and if you do it in a healthy manner. And I think we all want to look healthy as well. And I think we do when we try to be more healthy, we just naturally look more healthy. But I think that the obsession with looking good in America and around the world tends to go against Scripture when it seems like we're the attempt is to make people feel like they should be supermodels or everyone should look like everyone else. Everyone should look good and with not much concern about health. So I have struggled with weight and vanity most of my life up until just a few years ago. And I'll talk about that in just a little bit. But first I wanted to read a few scriptures on vanity and on health and looks. So the first one I wanted to read, the first scripture is from the Septuagint, which is the Bible of the Jews prior to Christ, and it's the Bible of the early Christians. This scripture is from the Wisdom of Sirach, 30:14 and 3:16. A poor man with good health is better off than a rich man afflicted in his body. Health and vigor are better than all gold, and a strong body than immense wealth. There are no riches greater than health of body. And then from the Old Testament, Jeremiah 4:30, when you are plundered, what will you do? So you clothe yourself with crimson, will you adorn yourself with ornaments of gold? Though you enlarge your eyes with paint, in vain you will make yourself fair. Your lovers will despise you. They will seek your life. And then also in the Old Testament, 1 Samuel 16:7, a portion of that reads, "For the Lord does not see as man sees, for a man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." And one last one from the New Testament, 1 Peter 3:3-4, and portions of that. And this is Peter's message to wives. Do not let your adornment be merely outward. And a little further, rather let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle, quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. So just to get back to my short story about my struggles with weight and vanity, I think those who know me as more of a taller, thinner guy. Well, ever since about junior high school, which is, I think, a time when young men or kids start to become, or when looks start to become more of a factor in a young person's life, I began getting obsessed with my weight, and for good reason, I thought. My problem was, and I mean no disrespect, to those who are working at and struggling with losing weight, but my problem was that I was very thin, and no matter what, I could not put on weight. And this became a problem and an obsession for me, starting in junior high, with other students calling me skinny and joking around and things like that. And I think for a male or a young man, it's a little different than a woman. I think for a male, being too thin is more of a sign of weakness or wimpiness, where maybe being a little overweight or a little burly is more of a sign of strength or toughness. So it had a little bit of a psychological effect on me, I think. But I remember in junior high, in English class, the teacher every day would give us a new word, just to expand our vocabularies, I guess. So she'd give us a new kind of more unusual type of word to learn. And one day the word was gaunt, and gaunt means basically thin or skinny. It also means, I think, disheveled or something like that. But the teacher basically said the word is gaunt, and that word means skinny. And she looked at me and said, "For example, John is very gaunt." And everybody laughed, and I kind of sat there a little bit devastated. And that went on and on through high school. The skinny remarks continued. I remember in PE in high school playing tennis, and a girl on the other side of the court was laughing because she said I looked like a stick figure running around chasing after the ball. So when I was, I think I was a junior or senior in high school, I bought a weight set at JCPenney, and I started lifting weights, and I also started eating things that I thought would help me gain weight. So I remember telling my mom what to get at the store. Whole milk, ice cream, tater tots, chocolate cream pie. So this became my obsession probably for the next 30 years or so. Eat a lot and lift weights. And it actually worked. And I think also I sort of grew into my body a little bit, but it worked. And I recall I was probably in my 30s at work. We were cleaning up or reorganizing our evidence locker, which is a big room with shelves of stuff in it. And I was reaching up on a shelf to grab a box, and the guy next to me looked over and he said, "Hey," something like, "Hey man, you're starting to get a gut." And I looked back at him and I said something snide back to him, like, "Mind your own business," or something like that. But inside, I was so happy because this was the first time that someone had commented on my gaining weight, and I was extremely happy. And I was doing, though, I was satisfying my addiction. I would call it an addiction to vanity. I was becoming more and more unhealthy, though, as I was doing that, because of the things I was eating mostly and eating too much of, and I was in poor aerobic shape. I would run out of breath fast. I was starting to suffer from high blood pressure, high cholesterol. And thankfully, in my 50s, I started getting concerned about these things. I started riding my bike regularly, walking, running, started eating more healthy, continued to lift weights. But because of all the healthier eating and aerobic activity, I started losing some weight, and I started hearing the "have you lost weight" remarks again, and it still bothered me a bit. So I focused on eating healthy fats, avocado and salmon and things like that, and I started lifting weights more. And just a few years ago, I guess maybe 5-6 years ago, I had about a 6-month run of lifting weights diligently, because I would sometimes quit lifting for a month or so, and I could feel myself getting thin, and I'd start lifting weights again. And so, but I did have about a six-month period where I really lifted weights a lot, and thought I was looking better, gaining a little bit. One day during this period, this six-month period, I saw someone who I hadn't seen for about that whole 6 months. I hadn't seen her before, and I had just seen her right about 6 months later after I had lifted all these weights. And so I saw her, and for about the first minute or so, we had a brief conversation, a small talk, and then after about a minute, she kind of looked at me and said, "Have you lost weight?" And I was pretty disappointed. I told her that, well, I had been lifting weights for the past 6 months, trying to gain weight, so I'm glad I did that, because if I hadn't done that, you'd probably be able to see right through me now, and I'd be so thin. And around the same time, probably within the same month or so, I was sitting with a friend of mine having a conversation, and this friend is more on the stocky side, not fat, but definitely more stocky, and he was mentioning that he would like to drop a few pounds, maybe 10 pounds, but he's having a hard time doing that. And I told him that I wish I had his problem, and I said, I have to eat a lot, and I have to eat when I'm not hungry, and I have to lift weights just to maintain my weight. And I said, if I had your problem, I would only eat when I'm hungry, and I would just stop lifting weights. I said it would be so easy. And so that conversation didn't go too much farther, and we changed the subject. And lastly, around the same time, I had a visit to the dermatologist just for a kind of a once-over checkup. And when I went to the dermatologist, she was looking me over, looking at my skin, and she was asking me those typical doctor things and questions: what are you doing, what do you do for exercise, and what are you eating, and things like that. And so I told her I lift weights, and then I ride my bike, and I walk and run. I said I'm sort of building myself up, but then I take it all off when I run and ride my bike. And she said, why are you trying to build yourself up? And I said, I just want to gain some pounds because I'm too thin. And she said, she looked at me, and she looked at her computer, and she said, how tall are you? And I said, I'm 6'1". And she looked at her computer, because they had just weighed me when I came in. And she said, okay, you are 6'1", you're 185 pounds. She said, you are basically just barely within your body mass index being normal. And I said, I know that. I said, I want to add to that, because I'm barely within range. And she said, no, you are barely within at the top level. She said, if you add about 5 more pounds, you're going to be in the overweight category. And she said, why, or she said, what do you see when you look at yourself in the mirror? And I said, I think I look normal. And she said, then why do you want to put on weight? And I said, because everybody is telling me I'm skinny. And then she said, okay. She said, I know what the problem is. And she started singing that song, You're So Vain by Carly Simon. Mm-hmm. And she told me that you are way too concerned with what other people think, and you're in a healthy range, but you're barely there. You need to, you could actually lose a few pounds. So she basically said, stop living for others and be healthy. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I realized that I was focused on vanity, and I realized later, after all this turmoil and after discovering these scriptures that I read about health and vanity, I realized that I actually feel a lot healthier when I'm thinner. I don't kind of lumber around like I used to when I was up near 200 pounds. I feel more spry. I just feel more naturally better. And I also realized that we're all born with a body type, and it shouldn't be our goal to change our body type, but it should be our goal to change our lifestyle and our diet if we need to, so that we live and remain healthy, to share the word with others. So my problem is, or was, more unusual, an addiction, I guess, to gaining weight, or an addiction to vanity, really is what it was. But it can be interchanged with losing weight as well when it comes to vanity. My point is that we shouldn't try and change our body type strictly for vanity, but we should try to be healthy. So we live a long time, we can share the word with others. So with that, I thank you for listening. I'll turn it back over to you.
Brother John, thank you. I appreciate your honest sharing, and maybe some out there can relate to what you are talking about. I can't. I'm more the other end of things, and I'll share a bit there. But I hope John's sharing about his battle with weight has helped you, and I think that's an important point he brought up. We can't be doing any of this for vanity's sake. You know, we don't want to add or lose weight for that kind of reasoning. And we've talked at length about the problem of overeating, and John experienced it in a different way. But now let's talk about overcoming it, both at a fellowship level and at a personal level. I think at a fellowship level, we need to address the issue. Brothers who preach, we need to discuss this from time to time. We should not back away from it. Just like we talk about being non-resistant and staying faithful to our spouse for life, sisters wearing a head covering in prayer and prophecy, and brothers not covering, women being silent in the worship, etc., we should not shy away from the preaching about gluttony. I also think that at a minimum, if we ever do have elders in our fellowship, they can't be brothers who can't control their eating. One of the requirements for an elder that Paul gave to Titus in Titus 1:8 was that he be self-controlled. That's just a few verses before his condemnation of the lazy gluttons in verse 12 of Titus chapter 1. Similarly, one of the requirements that Paul gave to Timothy for a bishop, which is an elder, is that he be, quote-unquote, temperate. And that's found in 1 Timothy 3:2. So obviously, to be a leader in the kingdom, it's important that we have self-control in every area, and that would include eating. But let's get to the nitty-gritty, and I think John already helped with this. And I'll share more about my own life here for a few minutes. Now let's talk about what we can do on a personal level to overcome an addiction to eating. Actually, that's the starting point. Acknowledging that it is an addiction. You've been unable to exercise self-control when it comes to your appetite. I doubt you'll ever be able to overcome it unless you acknowledge the problem. I know that was the case for me. Once I acknowledged it and I needed to change, change came. I think we need to realize that it's much harder to stay trim today than in ages past, for several reasons. I mean, we do have a tougher battle. It's important to realize the high rates of overweight and obese people in the U.S. and many other countries is something that's very, very, very new on the world landscape. You saw New York in 1911. Nearly everyone was thin. And that's you know, barely over 100 years ago. I remember growing up in the 60s and 70s, and I can assure you that the problem back then was nowhere near it was today, or near it is today. The overweight kid was a rarity. Now that kid is common, and I can testify to that. I taught high school for years, and obesity was a big problem among my high school students. And this isn't just in America, folks, but around much of the world. Actually, overweight and obesity rates have risen significantly since 1980 in every region of the world. And throughout most of history, obesity has been primarily associated with the rich. However, that's not the way it works in our century. Many poorer countries, like Mexico and Egypt, have extremely high rates of obese and overweight people. On the other hand, relatively rich countries like France have lower rates, but even there, they're rising. Within the U.S., the percentage of obese and overweight people is actually higher among the poor than among the rich. So what's brought all this on? I personally don't think the problem is that we have less self-control than what people used to have. So realize that. It's that we're faced with some new tests that most people in the past were not faced with. First, the invention of machines and technology means that few of us engage in the same amount of physical labor as people used to. Some people might view that as sin in itself, but I don't. I taught high school full-time for many years, and I worked full days, yet I really spent few calories in the process. I was at a desk, or standing and lecturing all day. The same is true with millions of other Americans and some of us listening right now. Perhaps as a society, maybe we have become a bit lazier, but I don't think that's the main problem at all. So most people need less calories and less food than they did a century ago. Like my students said, they saw people walking all over the place in New York City. How many of us are doing that in the city? You know, we're in our cars driving around. And so, get to my point here. I just lost my point. Okay. So most of us need less calories and less food, as I said. However, our appetites are still the same. So we're still people, like people were 200 years ago or 1,000 years ago. We still have hunger, but yet we don't need all the calories that they needed in the past. So we have to exert more self-control in eating than people did a century ago. So we have a tougher battle. I'm not here to say, your problem is because you lack self-control. No, we have a tougher battle out there in the world around us. And so we have to gird ourselves and realize this. The second and probably the biggest cause of this epidemic of obesity is the flood of highly processed foods that are ever present around us. What do I mean by processed foods? Let me explain. I'll use the illustration of the potato. In its raw form, it comes just out of the ground. Probably none of us want to eat a raw potato, correct? And so what do? At the very basic level, we will cook it or bake it. Now, that's not anything bad, and that's actually probably a good thing. It makes it just more edible. But what do after that? Most of us don't want to just eat a potato. So we'll add butter, we'll add sour cream, some chives, and all of a sudden we've changed the calorie input of it. And that's starting to be processed. But a lot of times we want to go beyond that. We want to make it into French fries, and so we fry it in oil and whatnot. And a lot of times we don't want to do that ourselves, so we go to a restaurant or a fast food place. Now that same potato, ounce per ounce, has a lot more calories than it had even before. And then sometimes we want to go further. We'll buy it into potato chip form. And again, it's been turned into even more calories, and actually much less nutrition that way. And this is what's going on. There is so much processed foods out there, and again, it's added calories, many times added sugar, added hormones, added other things that we don't need and probably shouldn't have. And again, that is the landscape we have, and that's a problem. So generally speaking, the more product is processed, the greater the concentration of calories. So do you see now the problem with processing? It's not inherently evil. Some foods have to be processed, that is, cooked before they can be eaten. Humans have always had that type of processing, but they usually didn't have the type of super processing we have today, like how we make French fries or potato chips. In the year 1820, if the average person wanted to consume 1,000 calories, here his wife had to go through considerable effort to do so. In fact, It might have been difficult to eat all 1,000 calories in one meal. Today, and I checked this out, a person go through the drive-thru at his local fast food restaurant, order a fries, large fries, and a large milkshake, and bingo, he's already consumed well over 1,000 calories, generally 700 or 800 in the milkshake alone. Now, I wish I could say that you could eliminate junk food and highly processed packaged foods from your diet and that would take care of the problem. I will say that it will help. If those things were eliminated, it would enormously reduce the amount of obesity worldwide. For instance, I dropped 10 pounds when I stopped drinking sodas. When my doctor said, oh, that's poison, all those sodas you're having every day, four or five sugary sodas, I dropped 10 pounds and it stayed off. However, there's still one more problem here in America. Food is so abundant and relatively affordable. We have inexpensive fast food, food delivered to our door with DoorDash, Uber Eats, etc. In a sense, we're all in the same shoes as the nobles in ancient Rome. In fact, even the poor in the United States are in the same shoes. Most people in the U.S. have as big a selection of food available to them as the Roman nobility. Probably even much more. So now, if you're a Roman Christian living in the days of Paul and you belong to the upper class, you had to exercise self-control in your eating. Of course, so did everyone else. But it was easier for the rich to overeat. The same thing is true of nearly all of us 21st century Americans. Nearly all of us have the means to overeat. We can actually afford it. The food's readily available. A lot of it's highly processed, a lot more calories, a lot more sugar. It's there. So we have to work harder, sometimes much harder, at not being gluttonous than people did one or two centuries ago, or I even say 50 years ago. So exercising self-control in eating is not easy when there's an abundance of tasty and expensive calorie-rich food all around us. And because of this abundance, many of us Americans have become addicted to eating. Even the term foodie, which I didn't hear years ago, that's a term now that somebody's into trying all these different kinds of foods. You may object to my use of the word addiction, but really, what else can we call it? We know it's bad for us to overeat and eat nutritionally poor foods, yet many of us just can't control ourselves, even though we know it's likely to bring all sorts of serious medical problems on us. My dictionary defines addicted as having given oneself up to a strong habit. If you think I'm being harsh, let me explain that I've been as guilty as the next person when it comes to not controlling my eating. I was a glutton, and that is extremely difficult for me to admit. And I even wanted to say I just had a problem with eating. I said, no, I need to be honest. But it's true. I had been overweight ever since my early 30s, and not too many years ago, I was even obese. I'm 5'10", and I weighed 212 pounds at one point. That is 30.4 on the BMI scale, which is obese. Even though my wife said lovingly on several occasions, and she said it lovingly, to quote-unquote, bail the belly. I did not see the sin and seriousness of the situation for many, many years. And no one ever told me I looked overweight, other than my loving wife. Interestingly, and John kind of talked about this, I have received much more flack for being a normal weight now. I'm not even thin. I'm normal. I've gotten a lot more flack for being a normal weight now. Comments like, please don't lose any more weight, or the skin under your neck's kind of loose now since you lost weight. Where there's no emphasis on maybe I'm in a lot better health, though. That might be a small price to pay. It was in my early 50s when my annual checkups with the physician were revealing more and more health issues, like an increasing A1C. I was getting into the pre-diabetic range, and that can lead to type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, chronic acid reflux. I was taking an over-the-counter pill every morning and then feasting on Tums every night. Heavy snoring, where I'd wake up my wife, etc. And these are all common issues with obesity, and that I decided from this to take firm and very decisive action. And I'm not going to give a message without hope. I'm not saying this to make you feel bad. I want us to have hope. I wanted to make sure I had my health and weight consistently under control before I ever would give this lesson. I don't want to be a hypocrite. And if I was going to give a message on addicted to eating, I knew I could keep a clear conscience in giving this message only if I've had complete victory myself. And I've been eating healthy, which is a huge component in achieving success and being a normal weight. I'm not here to advocate any particular way of eating. I have a certain way. There's others that work as well. in my original plan, I was going to eat in a way that was getting myself healthy. I was actually more concerned about the A1C and the high blood pressure and the snoring, stuff like that, than even losing belly weight and all that. I wanted to get rid of the acid reflex. I sensed if I ate more healthy, which means eating nutrient-dense foods and watch my sugar and carb intake, I'd get healthy and probably lose weight as well. It worked. I've kept the weight off and have reaped many health benefits for 3.5 years now. What are those? A normal A1C, last 3 years. Normal blood pressure. Very little snoring. No acid reflux at all. Better memory, more energy, better sleep, etc. In listening to an expert on overcoming addiction, he said it takes 2 to 5 years to have your brain rewired so the change is permanent. My mind is literally rewired in how I look at food and how I eat. I'm still a bit cautious, but it does look like I'm on the road to victory. This scripture keeps me striving to take care of the physical body God gave me. 1 Corinthians 3:16. Do you not know that you are the temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? How can we abuse the very temple that God has placed His Holy Spirit in? God is in us. Take care of that temple. I'm almost done. Also, if you're addicted to eating, please don't imagine that you can eat whatever you like and skirt the problem through exercise. I tried that for some years, mainly by power walks, hiking, and found that I lost very little weight by doing it. Although my pulse rate did lower, and to be sure, we need physical activity. Our bodies are designed for it. And if you're not getting much physical activity in your daily work, you need exercise for the sake of cardiovascular health. And if you exercise regularly, it may allow you to consume a little more food. But you're not going to exercise your way out of obesity. And you can't exercise your way out of sin. I say what and how much we eat is 80 to 90% of getting ourselves healthy physically and being in a normal weight. Now, we can boost our metabolism through exercise and weight training. But for me, simply eating foods that are for the most part unprocessed or minimally processed and nutrient dense, meaning that there are many vitamins and minerals in them, as well as nearly cutting out sugar and excess carbohydrates from what I eat, has led me to lose 60 pounds, and maybe more importantly, I've kept it off. I'm currently at 152 pounds, I have a BMI of 21.8, and my range of acceptable weight and BMI is 132 pounds to 174, so I'm not even on the skinny side, I'm smack dab in the middle. So right now I'm at normal. Man's original diet in Genesis was fruit and perhaps vegetables. And it's certainly not wrong to eat meat and dairy products. God specifically gave mankind permission to eat meat, and He referred to the promised land as a land flowing with milk and honey. Interestingly, in Exodus, we see the Israelites had a simple daily diet of quail, which was meat, and manna, a bread-like product that nourished them for many years. John the Baptist ate locusts and wild honey. Locusts are a nutrient-dense food with more protein pound per pound than beef that is sought after as a food in many parts of the world. Honey also has some nutritious properties, but I would caution you not to eat too much of it. It does have quite a bit of sugar. But there's also a lot to be said about having a simple diet. I now usually eat 2 meals a day like the Israelites, who had manna in the morning and quail in the evening. I eat until I'm full, but no more. This helps me to snack very little between meals. I also do intermittent fasting, which means I usually have my dinner before 6 p.m. and I don't have breakfast until later the next morning, which gives the body plenty of time to digest and rest between meals. In closing, a number of early Christian writers, in fact, a lot of them write about how we as Christians need to eat healthy. Clement of Alexandria said much on this that resonates with me because I've seen my eating habits change and they now closely follow Clement's guidance. Here's a quote from him. There is discrimination to be employed in reference to food, and it's to be simple, truly plain, suiting precisely simple and artless children, as to ministering to life, not luxury. And the life to which it conduces consists of two things, health and strength, to which plainness of fare is most suitable, being conducive to digestion and lightness of body. For the sake of time, I'll summarize some of Clement's description of healthy eating that include go beyond this quote. He says things like, eat to live, not live to eat, and eat to the glory of God. Eat simple, plain foods. Avoid pastries and luxuries. Go moderately on condiments and sauces. Go easy on variety. Avoid foods that have diminished nutrition. And he talks about white flour. Eat nutrient-dense foods. Eat moderately, but don't stuff yourself. Prefer raw foods. Avoid fried foods. Keep away from things that bewitch the appetite, he says. In other words, you eat them, but you're still hungry. Sound counsel. I find myself gravitating towards whole, nutrient-dense, mentally processed foods. I eat less meals, snack less, and yet feel more satisfied. And I'm in much better health and a lot lighter. Of course, this doesn't mean you'll no longer have issues with your physical body. In spite of breaking my addiction to eating, I still had my retina detached earlier this year. These bodies are not designed to last for eternity. That body comes later. Also, if you're struggling with overeating, talk to a brother or sister who can help you. When I started this journey 3.5 years ago, I had two brothers. One of them, many of you met, Glenn Roseberry, and another, Chris Donahue. And they were on the same journey. Glenn was like me. He had about 50, 60 pounds he needed to lose because it was, you know, hurting his health. Chris was morbidly obese at around 500 pounds. Chris has lost much of that weight. Though through Facebook, we encouraged and helped each other. Have someone journey with you. Be honest with yourself and get help if you need it. And if your weight and health are normal, keep doing what you're doing. God bless you all. And John and myself, we love you, and we hope this blessed you and hopefully gets us thinking and talking. Eric, go right ahead.